Hey, this is an audio episode of the Gabriel Mayer Show. This is the third one. This is the third audio only. This is late. Did I miss one last week and this week? I don't even remember at this point. This is, but here we are. Here we are. Let's just go into it. What's going on? I'm not asking you. I'm more like asking myself so that I can get myself together. I'm filming this thing on Monday. Not me personally. I'm going to be in this thing. That's just work, though. That's just like a little side work, which at this point I am back in this lovely, lovely place where I'm willing to take any and all work anywhere. So I'm definitely going to be, you know, back to marketing myself as a singing slut and a voice whore, and I'm gonna be out there busking and all that stuff, which is good because I've just been like inside not doing anything. Actually, I'm still not sure about the busking thing just because of the spiking happening, the general anti-mask, anti-quarantine sentiment, and the coronavirus infection numbers still rising. Busking still seems irresponsible, although I do imagine there are certain spaces where I would be more than adequately distanced from people and well within my legal rights to rock the fuck out with a loud sound system. So I'm thinking, Barclays Center has like a big enough space, and it's cleared out enough where I can go down there for like 4 hours and have a good time, maybe do like a stream from there. So I might do that. Oh, I hate that. I hate when people do that. Because it's like Andy Dwyer from The Office. He killed that. He killed that sort of voice. Like, no one does that anymore. Unless you're intentionally trying to be annoying. I shouldn't miss, you know, I'm sorry if you really do like the audio only ones, where there's no video component whatsoever, I shouldn't miss them. Because it's more like a classic podcast where you just hear someone talking. But maybe I feel like I don't have anything to say. That's never true of me. That hasn't been true in forever. I always have something to say about stuff. I'm very excited about the real possibility of Biden winning the elections, because he does seem to be solidly ahead in the national polls and in the state polls. And he's very close in certain battleground states, and also like being able to say things like that and know what the fuck I'm talking about. That's nice. Because I can just sense that a lot of people are just tuned out from the process. They're like, whatever. It's like, To be politically, what do you call it? Politically, I don't have words right now, but politically, like, oh, it doesn't matter, I'm not involved in politics. Politics is just this giant game. It's like, I see that we're reaching epic, let me talk in actual terms. We're reaching record voter turnouts in key states, especially with the youth. So this is a really important election. I don't think that whole like Illuminati, QAnon, Joe Rogan, politics is just a game, we're all human beings kind of thing flies with me anymore. I just consider it like, oh, that's just a form of illiteracy. You're just politically illiterate. You don't understand how politics works. You don't understand how subsidies works. You don't understand why it's important for you to be aware. I mean, this is the general election we're talking about. This is easy to get involved in. I think you participate in the election with your attention and your interest, not just your vote. And it's cool to watch like Saturday Night Live and be like, "Oh, Mike Pence with the fly." Yeah, I heard. It's like, no, like you gotta watch it and know what they're talking about and like have like some kind of form some kind of opinion on these guys, you know? Form some kind of real opinion besides Donald Trump is racist and orange and you don't like us that thing. Like understand like to me it's so interesting. It's so people will like really willingly watch Game of Thrones, which is a teleplay about a lady with dragons and the political system that underlies that and the own political system affecting the real world reality where, we have, like dragons, the mysticism of dragons comes from a time before airplanes. And it's like somewhat of a novelty that we hold on to that still is like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if there was a thing that flew and breathe fire? It's called a flamethrower. Elon Musk sells flamethrowers. You can buy a flamethrower and you can buy a plane ticket. No longer an amazing cool thing, but people will invest more attention into the politics of a flying flamethrower lady with access to peroxide, the hair bleaching agent, than they will to like, understanding like why Mitch McConnell is such a figure. You know, he bought a lot of money into Kentucky. That's all it takes. You bring a lot of money into Kentucky and you can like track that to you. That saves you a seat for a while in politics. Because in the end, of course, that's what it, that's what it ends up being all about. I forgot to do a lottery this week. I'm really gonna have to do that. I have to do that today. How many days are there in this month? Holy fuck. I'm gonna have to do this lottery, and I'm gonna have to do the next lottery early on that account. I'm gonna have to give people double prizes because I was late. Or double up the lottery even. Thank you to everyone that's on Patreon. That's where I'm running these lotteries. It's patreon.com/GabrielMayers. This is where you'll find this. So the way the lottery works is anyone that subscribed for $5 is entered in the lottery once, and if you're subscribed for $10 or more, then you're entered in the lottery twice. And what I do with the prizes is I just like, okay, so Meg Newman won a prize. By the way, Meg Newman, if you're listening to this, Meg Newman's an AFK fan, which is cool to have those people that just like kind of, I wouldn't say blindly support me, but I definitely think Meg is a. I might be characterizing this, but they might just be, who knows? She might be dead or in the hospital. I hope that Meg is all right. But anyway, Meg won some prizes, but she doesn't seem to be checking Patreon like that because I sent her a couple messages like, hey, you won some prizes. Just, when you win a prize, you have to choose if you want like a hat, shirt, socks, or something like that. And then I go on Zazzle or something and just make the merch. Just go into Procreate and just make some cool merch. Just, not mass-produced ones. At first, I was gonna send because I have a stack of printed tees and some embroidered tees that I actually just wear now. I don't, because I'm like I've had these for like so long that I'm just gonna own these tees and maybe just give them to a couple friends. But I was gonna give those to the Patreons. But I actually think it's cooler to spend the Patreon money, some of the Patreon money, to give back to the patrons as this prize giveaway thing, and that each prize is specifically made on the spot for that patron. Like for Amanda's thing, I wrote Amanda won a postcard and Amanda won some socks because I thought that was cool, and I like things to be very, very da-da, very like blunt, very like ce n'est pas un pipe, It's what kind of accent was that? Anyway, referring to this, I think that's referring to the concept of Dadaism, which is an art movement based around, like, I don't know, you take a picture of a toilet and you write toilet on it, and it's art. I get it.
like the honey says honey on it, and then and you take a picture of it. I get it. Even me saying that out loud, I'm like, that's cool. I get that. Or like you label all the items in your home with their proper name with a little label maker and then take pictures of it. I don't know. Involving labels a lot, I guess, is Dadaism. Not really. It's sort of like broken brain art. I'm practicing this riff a lot. Because it's in this song that I'm going to be releasing as a single. And I'm just, I guess I'm going to be releasing it through Bandcamp and just free to anyone on my Patreon to download. Because I think I want to try moving over to open sourcing my music, my original music, so that it gets more traction. Not so that it gets more traction. I'm streaming, right? I'm encountering constant problems with you know, takedowns. You upload videos and stuff, and because it has a song in the background, it gets taken down. So alternatively, there's lots of this is the concept behind this move. There's lots of content creators out there, like lots, and more than ever being born as I speak in the history of the world, right? At this very moment, content creators, people who need to create days, hours, months of original content, and they need music in the background to fill up moments, but most of the music that you hear is what? Copyrighted, registered with different companies to get flagged by various AI robots and things like that. But there are so many professional looking, and this is important for them to be professional looking and have solid code as the base for a website, not be some like early 2000s dark web looking website for these things. But there's these sites where you can register your songs, upload them, and have them royalty free music, it's called. So you and I believe that is a very valuable market for musicians coming up, to have music that someone could play on their radio show without getting flagged, to have music that you know, and for certain songs, really, like, it's so funny because I've uploaded them, let's say, to what's the name of the service? I don't know what the fuck the name of these services are. Any DistroKid? There we go. That's a really popular one. Because I uploaded my songs to DistroKid, it registers them, and I'm like, yeah, I want to collect YouTube revenue. I want to collect this revenue. Blah, 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 blah. Because I collect that revenue, that means people are limited in their use of my song. It's actually a bad move, unless you're Lady Gaga. And if you ain't Lady Gaga, then there's no reason you want to charge people for putting your song in their YouTube video so that you can make 32 cents in that. Really, YouTube's going to make 70 to your 30, or actually in internet numbers, they're going to make 70 to your point 30. So don't, by monetizing, just blip over to Gary Vee and everything he's talking about. Building your fan base is of the premium, and you build the fan base by offering value. And I think that these royalty free content marketplaces are a great place to offer value. Something I'm looking for right now. What am I looking for? Like digital. I'm just looking for like music without words that can be in the background of stuff and help keep attention on things. And I don't want to necessarily take the time to sit there and write like a bunch of music, instrumental music myself, to do that. And so, like, even though I'm a musician, I'm now in the market for this content, and I want it to become free or cheap, and I want it good. And if it's good enough, like, I'm gonna like promote that person, And I know everybody wants like $100, but I think out of a lot of these scenarios where you're like, you know, upload your songs to Spotify for distribution, you're not making $100 in a year off your indie album with your promotion methods, unless you're putting in $1,000. That's the one benefit of that, you know, if I have an original song and I think it's good enough, I can put money into promoting it and then get some of that money back in distribution. But again, most of the distribution money is going to your distributor. So I'm working with a couple friends. I'm working with Koa and I'm working with Amber. To produce something. And I hate to put it in that way, but I'm obsessed with producing things and producing as opposed to making. I think artists generally concern themselves with just like, oh, I'm going to write a poem and put it in a bookshelf. I'm going to write a poem and put it in this drawer of poems that I have. And as like a producer, I want to focus on how we can get those poems into people's brains. Like, how can we get that out there? And I feel so powerful having moved to that position. Because I just feel braver. And as an artist, as someone who does create, like, it's like, I'm not making music to be like, oh, is this good? Is this good? Oh, I think this one is good. I'm going to put it in my little bag so I can feel good about the thing that I made. It's like, no, I'm making this for people. This is for people. This is music. I heard music. You know, I absorb music my entire life. I'm giving that back. And I find it so weird when people get in this place artistically where they're like, they absorb the beauty and they'll talk about the, like, all the beautiful things around them, and then their synthesizing of all that, they keep it completely to themselves, because I think it's just an ego thing. I think your ego gets wrapped up in it, and if it's bad, then you're a bad person. If it's good, then you're a good person. There's just too much weight on it. And I think if it just becomes like an act of service that you do, then it stops being about being good or bad, you know? Because there's always going to be someone worse that's going to learn from you. Or someone who just doesn't have that high of a standard who's going to be entertained by you. So. And so I produce now. And I realize you don't really need a bunch of expensive equipment to produce. You just really need, like balls. Like the metaphorical huevos. Like creativity is like really, what do you call it? Creativity stock is cheap. No. Yes. No. I don't know how to make it a stock metaphor. I can't. Creativity is cheap though. Everyone could be creative. I spent the day and I like painted some watercolors of my neighbor's fence. It's like, that's nice. The fact that that type of person considers themselves an artist is always going to make me furious. Always. Deep down, on the surface, yeah, you go. Great painting. Great job. Everyone's allowed to create. But being creative does not make you an artist, my friend. To be an artist, you have to be willing to starve to death. Because you believe you're important enough or good enough that people should pay you to make stuff. That requires a lot of bowels. And I think a lot of people are more on the side of like, they're like, it's just good to be creative. Like adult coloring book style. Like, yeah, let me just color in red, yellow. Yeah, I'm an artist. It's like, you're not an artist. You're not an artist until you cry. Okay? Like, really, over this stuff. And you know, I just mean emotionally involved in the creating of art and if there's no stakes, there's no stakes to what a lot of people are creating. They have no ambition involved in it. And I think art is one of those curious areas where you can be like totally shit and have no ambition in it and still call yourself an artist, and it's generally accepted to do that because it's more seen like, oh, like art is just like a thing like anyone can do, or like musicianship is just like, yeah, like I have a guitar and I'm playing. It's like, no, like make a living from it. Not even, you know, and I don't even mean like make an adequate living. Make a bad living from it. Make a bad living from it and work from McDonald's, but then you're an artist or a musician. But what it is most of the time is like someone's like, I don't know, a student. They're a student or something, or they work a job and they play guitar, because like I tell everyone all the time, guitar's not that hard to play and singing is something everyone can do. So this is not like necessarily hard. The barrier for entry is very low. But in terms of like, you're going to make a living at it, that's like some balls to send that email being like, hey, pay me money for this. Pay me money to go like this. Ah, I'm going to show up here for an hour or two. Pay me 170. This is what said to someone. Someone's like, I want to pay you $175 to do this singing job. Right? I'm just being open about the numbers here. And I'm like, normally in a post-pandemic world, I'd be like, all right, that's fine. No, thanks. Because I just go out busking and make $200 in a morning and have the option of taking a shit and being high the whole time. But in a post-pandemic world, I'm like, yes, I will take that job, but I'm only going to be there 90 minutes and that's it. You know, I love having professional boundaries as it comes to being an artist, because when you start out, you're pretty much really just a whore. I'm saying I'm being very rude about that word. Work. Of course, sex work is work, but you're really like, I mean, I'm sure starting out in sex work is the same way. You don't have any dedicated clientele, and I actually relate being a musician and entertainer to sex work a lot, because it does seem to be the very same casting couches. You don't have dedicated clientele, and like whenever someone offers you an opportunity, you take it, and they treat you as if you are desperate. So that's the main thing. And then when you get a little like confidence in what you can bring to the table, and you realize that a lot of tables are left unseated, bare. Where's this metaphor going? A lot of tables are left bare. You can be like, all right, now I can be like, hey, you know, I bring a grand feast. And since I'm bringing this feast, and, you know, this is all you can afford, 90 minutes. So. Yeah, that's the way I like to do things. And it feels good, more importantly, it feels good to be like, because I feel like kind of 300, but all this is like a post-pandemic rendering. I feel like 300 is like the minimum for me to go outside normally. But the fact that this is a woman of color producing a small film, and we're in a pandemic, it's New York, and we're all trying to do something. It's like, no, I'll take the job, right? Take the job for whatever money they offer, which is, you know, appropriate for their budget. I just assume people aren't lowballing me. Because I don't like to get in the process of being like, hey, like, give me more money. Because that's not what this is. It's like, I have a feeling of like how much I would like to do something for, and that's usually what I go with. Because I have done enough of not charging enough and doing things and then feeling like taken from after. And so like I like to feel evensies or a little, depending on the situation, a little bit above. Depends on how big the production is. The bigger the production is, the more I want to distance myself from it, basically. So I want to charge more money and spend less time. The bigger the production is. So that it's not like a burden on me, so that I'm like showing up, not spending that much time there and getting overpaid to be in something probably unpleasant. That's the way it'll work best. And it kind of goes that way for like most things, really. Like a wedding, like chances are I don't want to be at your wedding. And a lot of people will be like, hey, me and my partner are big fans. And it's like, that's funny, because I'm like a person that exists on the internet and I've never heard of you. And a lot of my big fans have like come and met me in person or sent me actual messages multiple times or nudes even. So, like, I have, like, a different range of, like, what I consider someone to be, like, a big fan of mine. I more read that as, like, your sound is valuable. And so, like, people be like, hey, your sound is valuable. And I think you might be cheap because you play in the subway. We play my wedding. And, like, my immediate thought is, like, no. Because, like, first of all, who wants to be at any formal occasion ever? And who wants that to be a wedding? Unless it's, like, some crazy wedding that's supposed to be, like, a great party. But it is a church ceremony. Even if it's not in a church. It's a church and legal ceremony. No one wants to be around that. So, like, I will overcharge for weddings off the bat, just as a principle. Hey, will you do our... If it's out of town, get out of here. I'm going to give you a go-away price, which is a price that I think is too much for to be paying for me. It's a go-away price. And depending on the vibe, I will not be haggled down. If they're a person of color and they're actually chill, then I might be open to, would you do it for this price? But if they seem like, hi, we're, we'd like you to play, then, hi, I charge $5 million. It's like, I don't expect you to pay $5 million. I expect you to go, you're not worth that much. Because that's what people do sometimes. And I'm like, oh, well, I'm glad I didn't, like, agree to do anything with you. Because I don't think that's that much. And the normal way people do things is haggling. And your lack of respect for me as a business person, this was, like, all a test. I do things, yeah, like I say all the time, the audience isn't your friend. These people at the end of that are listening to the podcast are like my auditors, you know? They're not like, I call them fans, but they're listening to everything I say. They're listening to everything I say. Some people are listening to things twice. These aren't fans. This is the emotional equivalent of the IRS trying to figure out how I'm a bad person. Or how to pedestalize me and make me feel trapped in their perception of me as some sort of god, when actually I'm just a singing ass nigga from Brooklyn who's got a couple things to say. But people from Brooklyn always have things to say. Have I given you enough time, audio podcast listeners? Audio podcast, no, it's only been half an hour. That's actually, no, the audio's a half an hour. The audio's are half an hour. The audio's can be hours and hours and hours. I got into some stuff. I met someone amazing. That's probably, like, the biggest thing going on for me right now. I'm just trying not to let that consume me. Because I think the thing that, to me, feels the scariest about meeting someone who's a good potential partner to date is, like, rushing it. Like, I'm in a place where I'm, like, pretty good. Like, I'm alone in my house and this is fine. I don't like being alone in my bed that much. But I'm alone now, and this is fine. And actually, being alone in my bed is actually pretty okay most of the time. Sometimes I'm like, this is lonely. But I will get a body pillow with a Japanese lady printed on it. If it feels good, like, let it feel good, you know? I think in the past I've been too, like, what's this gonna be? This is gonna be, this is just like, no, I met this new great person. I'm gonna keep, like, getting to know this person, you know. I'm still learning about this person, and I mean actually doing that, and I don't ever see people doing that with anyone. People mostly just fuck people and hang out with them. They don't learn about them. So I'd like to learn about someone that I plan on dating. That would make sense. You know, it's so funny, it's, I put this stuff out, right, and this is like the great
test to me of, like, people. I put all this stuff out. Like, hey, this is me. Hey, this is me. I'm gay. Hey, this is me. I'm gay. Hey, I'm gay. This is me. I am gay. Hey, I'm gay. This is me. Put all this out. And sometimes people feel like, okay, I know this person then. And I'll say it all the time on stream. This isn't me. This is a character I play for mass-produced content. This is not an accurate representation of me all the time. And people be like, okay, I know who you are. I feel like I know you. And I'm like, well, that's not good because that's not me. That guy on the screen is actually dead. He's a character that has been played and down uploaded and downloaded, and he is gone. You can get an idea of me from that. You can get an idea of, like, a type of character that I might play in that moment on the video. But if you feel like you know me, that just means that the character is really good. But I also might be doing that thing where I just don't give myself credit for, like, being a charismatic person, what have you. But this is really more about people's lack of, like, wanting to, not even wanting to, thinking to investigate underneath the veneer of the performance that I do in front of a camera. That to me seems like so basic. Like, and, like, sometimes I tell myself, like, oh, no, I don't really want to date someone that's, like, in the industry, like, a performer, like, kind of, like, into, like, how industry works and industry people are and stuff like that. But I do kind of feel like people that are not into the entertainment industry, performing, that kind of stuff, they don't understand how performers are. And so they meet, like, a charismatic performer, and they're like, wow, I've never met someone like this before. It's like, I meet people like this all the time. Because they spend all day talking to a phone, talking to a camera, talking to a person about a thing, doing their makeup, doing their hair, being in front of a camera. They're charismatic people. They're attractive. And so, like, I get a little scared that, like, the person I'm dating isn't going to pass that test of, like, seeing through the veneer of whatever entertainer thing I'm doing. And they're going to, like, not ask me questions and find out about me. And I'm like, and I'm feeling kind of, like, lonely. And it's, and it feels lonely when someone's, like, looking at you adoringly because they're, like, they have some idea of you or something. So, you know, don't have some idea of me or, like, anybody or whatever. And you guys know this. Like, or do get your idea of me. But, like, know that your idea of me is just, like, your idea of me. And just because you think that I'm that thing doesn't lock me into that thing. The same way that me thinking that you're something for thinking I'm a thing doesn't lock you into being that thing. And I'm sure in just in that string of logical arguments that I'm presenting, you can see how useless that whole arrangement is of, like, trying to, I guess, unempathetically dissecting someone through this medium. I think I've put myself in, like, kind of a predicament with my career, but, like, a sort of lovely predicament. Anyway, this is the audio. Abrupt ending.